Thanks so much for joining us today on WPR. We are down to the final four of March Madness for both the men's and the women's basketball teams. Who do you think is going to win it all? Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today. We're talking college hoops today with our guest, Justice Cleveland. Great to have him back. He's sports director at WEAU-TV in Eau Claire. We've talked many times. It's great to have him back. As we talk with him, hope you'll join in. Are you watching this year's men's and women's tournaments? Which team do you have to win it all? What do you think about the up-and-coming stars of women's basketball? We're certainly going to talk about that today. And you can join in. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. And you know what? We'll probably try and get a comment or two in on the Brewers since this is their first home game of the season. I think about 3 o'clock today, isn't it, Justice?
Yep, 3 o'clock against the Twins.
Against the Twins. And Bob Uecker's back, 90 years old, and he'll be calling today's game. So that's cool. But let's talk Final Fours. Maybe start with the men's. We've got How is your bracket looking, by the way? Did you fill one out?
Yes. Oh, yeah. it's a rite, or you know, a rite of spring. I think you have to, even if most of the time it's thrown away after the first weekend. But yeah, this year I'm actually not doing too bad. I picked Purdue and UConn to go into the finals. I know Purdue, after some struggles in the tournament, was a tough pick, but right now I'm looking good, but we'll see what happens after, you know, coming up here in the Final Four.
Yeah, I had UConn on the one side, UConn winning it, but I had them playing Marquette for the national championship.
Yeah.
And I had Arizona.
There's some teams that I tend to stay away with, but I still, like Arizona, I've had bad luck anytime I pick them. But somehow I still do it. You're like, this is going to be the year. That's how it was with Purdue this year. It's like, you know, they struggled in those early rounds getting eliminated the last couple of years. It's like, okay, maybe this is, they're finally due. Kind of like when Virginia with Tony Bennett got eliminated as the one seed against a 16 and then came back and won the title the next year. That's kind of how I figured with Purdue this year.
Well, you know what? Purdue the last 2 years was eliminated by a double-digit team.
Yep.
And they could get eliminated by a double-digit team again this year.
Yeah, who would have thought? Who would have thought the run that you would see from NC State? I mean, it's, you know, harkens back obviously to the Jim Valvano team that made the run to the title. I mean, to come in playing in a tough conference and just run the table like they have to get a chance to even play Purdue is amazing. So they're, you know, all the pressure's on Purdue. You know that, because NC State, they're playing, you know, with house money, as they say. They're at this point, they didn't expect to even be this close to the Final Four to be in it. It's amazing. So yeah, it's going to be fun to see what they can do against the Purdue team and Zach Edey that, you know, just went off the last game with a 40-point performance.
Yeah, I think just thinking about it a bit, Purdue has a pretty good outside, you know, 3-point shooting team, but they don't rely on it as much. And I think the reason NC State got as far as it has is like Marquette, for example, which made like three trays the whole game when they're normally, you know, hitting about a dozen at least. And they were getting good shots. They just weren't making them.
Yeah. And I think you've seen that with basketball nowadays. I think with Purdue, yeah, they can move it inside with Zach Edey. But if you're not making 3-pointers in today's basketball, it's tough to win. It really is, because teams run so fast up and down the court there that if you're not hitting a three every once in a while, it's really easy to fall behind and not have a chance to get back. And I think, you know, with Wisconsin would be a good example of a team that really, if they're not hitting their 3-pointers, they struggled. And we saw that in the tournament.
So the NC State is an 11 seed. And I think it's the lowest seed to make the final. There are other 11 seeds that made the Final Four before. I think George Mason, I actually won some money on that that year. That was 2006. Loyola made it. UCLA made it as an 11 just a couple of years ago. And NC State.
VCU with Shaka, I believe. Shaka Smart's VCU team in 2011. I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 2011. So what's been the, as you think back to those, the secret of their success is just somebody got hot?
I think they're just one of those teams that was a late bloomer, that everybody just kind of started working well together late in the season. Again, they play in a tough conference, and you get games like, a Virginia and throw those in there. I mean, they had a couple of three-game losing streaks thrown into the mix. And it's just like all of a sudden they got to the tournament and things just kind of just everything started to gel. And I think we kind of saw that. I alluded to how the Badgers played in the Big Ten tournament. The potential's there the whole time. And you saw spurts of it during the season. But in the Big Ten tournament, you saw it all work together. Now, you know how easily that can fall apart.
Yes.
But for NC State, for them to maintain this, it's nothing more than, it's amazing to see this in this day and age of basketball. But it also shows you that I think these teams aren't that far apart like they used to be. Like it used to be, if you were a one, those 1-4 seeds, good luck getting past any of those teams. But now I think in the changing landscape of college men's basketball and women's basketball, that these teams are all very, very close when you get that 1-64.
Yeah, that's for sure. And the women, on the women's side, those teams are getting better. And there's a lot of teams that from the men's side, like South Carolina on the women's side, what are they, 32-0 or something?
36.
36?
Yeah.
Is it? I can't go any further without talking about Iowa for a minute and the LSU game last night. I don't know if you had a chance to see any of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that was to talk about the changing landscape for women's basketball. I mean, that was the front and center story of the night, was that LSU-Iowa game. And that just shows you just how much that sport keeps growing. And it's fun to watch. I think it's fun to watch this growth in a sport, and it's really starting to take over the national landscape. I mean, Caitlin Clark, I feel like women's basketball is having their Magic Johnson, Larry Bird moment, mm-hmm. where it had always been popular, but now it's taking a leap into the stratosphere. And really, I mean, for that game last night, I haven't seen the ratings, but I'm sure they were great for ESPN. I mean, that game was what everybody was talking about, and it'll keep going. I mean, the matchups are intriguing, and now you have Iowa versus UConn. UConn, the dynasty of women's basketball, and it maybe, sparked what we're seeing now. Tennessee, you got to throw in there too with Pat Summitt, I think. But yeah, I mean, for the matchups that they've had, this has been a fun tournament to watch, and Caitlin Clark has been a lot of fun too. So has that LSU team that they got the victory over last night.
And Angel Reese on the LSU side. So there's another a player who is well-known. And, I don't think any woman basketball player is better known, I think, than Caitlin Clark right now. And she certainly earned last night an example of her ability, not only what she scored, 41 points.
Yeah.
And then, then she also had at least a dozen assists.
I mean, she can, the passes she makes, I mean, you think back to the days of like a Larry Bird or somebody like that, or Luka Doncic in the NBA, who could just pass it from anywhere. They could be moving to the left and they just flip over the wrist. It's getting under the basket to somebody wide open. You have to be ready anytime for that ball to come to you from her. Then that's just amazing. And then she could shoot it from anywhere. I mean, anywhere she walks past half court, she could launch at any moment. So, I mean, how do you defend that? You try your best. And she came up and showed that she's doing what big stars do in those moments.
Well, and she was guarded by somebody who was a little shorter than her, which I think I'd have put they switched around later, but it was kind of getting to be too late before they got some taller players on her. To kind of block her,
yeah.
At least get their hand at her face. But it's pretty hard to even get your hand at her face when she just kind of strolls across the half line or races across the half line and shoots from there, like right. Two steps in.
Yeah, and if she pump fakes, then she just cuts to the basket, goes behind her back like she did there in the, I think it was like the second quarter. I mean, that's just how amazing she is, and it's been a lot of fun to watch.
It has indeed. Justice Cleveland, our guest today, sports director at WEAU-TV in Eau Claire. Always great to have him with us to talk sports. We're talking the men's and women's Final Four. Wondering what your thoughts are. Maybe NIL will come into play here. I'm sure we need to talk about that a little bit. And player movement. That's another thing that we need to talk about with Justice. And we'll probably get to the Brewers, too. If you want to throw something in on the Brewers, you can do that, too. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we'll be back with Justice. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR. Stay with us. Great to have you along today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're talking a bit of college basketball and March Madness and filling us in on his version of March Madness is Justice Cleveland, the sports editor of WEAU-TV in Eau Claire. Great to have him back. As we talk with Justice about the tournament, maybe, and we will get to the Brewers as well, I want to hear from you. Which team do you want to win it all? What are your questions about NIL, name, image, and likeness, and brand deals in college basketball? If you're a Wisconsin or a Marquette fan, tell us what you think about your team's performance in the tournament. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. You can email us, too, and email is ideas@WPR.org, ideas@WPR.org. There are some, you know, back to Purdue and North Carolina for a minute, the NC State, I should say. There is a kind of an interesting matchup, and Zach Edey and NC's DJ Burns Jr. is kind of like two different. What's your take on that battle and that matchup?
That's going to be a fun one.
Yeah.
DJ Burns, who he's listed at 6'9", 275, but man, he's getting interest from the NFL because of his size. So him against Edey, who's 7'4". 7'2", 7'4".
I mean, he's 7'4", I think.
Yeah, I mean, and just that height, you can't teach height. That's what they always say, and he's an example of that. And he's got a good touch around the hoop. So Burns is going to have to do whatever he can to, you know, shove him out of the way. I mean, that's what we've seen anybody has to do, is just try to keep him out from getting closer to the hoop. But, I mean, their offense runs through him, Zach Edey. He really does. So that we'll see if that what ends up happening there.
It'll be really interesting, and NC State's got this. What is his name? D.I. Horn, I think it is.
D.J. Horn.
Or yes. D.J. Horn, yeah, who is a heck of a shooter.
Yeah, and I mean that's part of that success is them kind of having that ability to go inside and out, kind of like Purdue. And then once you get hot from the around the perimeter there, it'll take you far, and we've seen that with NC State.
Yeah, Chaz in Madison has something for us. Hi, Chaz.
Hi, Larry.
What's on your mind today?
I just wanted to give a shout-out to the Wisconsin women's basketball team who just lost to St. Louis in the Grade 8 of the NIT. We're kind of accustomed to postseason success here, but usually on the men's side, so it was fun to see the women picking up the torch this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And you were nodding in agreement, too, Justice.
Yeah, I mean, that's a team that you saw, we were talking in the last segment about a team kind of figuring it out as the season went on. And we really saw that team really start to figure it out and to get the WNIT a bid and then make the most of it, you know, almost get the victory over St. Louis Billikens yesterday there in the Grade 8. It's a good way to finish out the season. I mean, it gives you a lot of momentum heading towards next year to make those runs. And that's why it's kind of interesting that, you know, you saw some of those men's team decline the NIT invitation. Well, we're seeing with like the Wisconsin women's team what that invitation can do and what kind of momentum that can build for the next season. More games is always big, and I think that was very important for the Badgers this year and it to find some success there in the postseason.
I would agree, and I am very optimistic about the Lady Badgers. You know, they lost that game last night, but they lost their best player, their center, 53 seconds into the game.
Right. Yep.
And then they lost their second, leading scorer. They lost at about the four-minute mark, and yet they were still – they had a lead with a one-point lead with about a minute and a half to go.
Yeah, it was a fun game to watch. It really was. It was just back and forth, and you know they had a chance there at the end, and just couldn't kind of get over the mountain there in that final minute. But still, yeah, to battle losing those two players and still have a chance to win just speaks, you know, of how much that team has grown during the season.
Yeah, all props to the team and the coach, who is doing a really really good job, I think. Well, you know, another coach that's been doing a good job is Shaka Smart. For Marquette, let's talk about, they made the Sweet 16. It's an improvement over last year, but the program wasn't moribund, but it was, Shaka Smart is taking it to a little bit different level, I think.
I think so. You know, they had the success there, you know, around 2010, you know, with the Buzz Williams teams, and then had some years of struggle, and then Shaka came in and it was like immediate, like just maybe a change of attitude. It just kind of seemed like everything kind of switched on when he got there. And that just maybe speaks to just his personality and the way he coaches, that guys bought in right away. And every year that they've made the tournament since he started, they've gotten a step closer to the championship game. So for them, you know, keep this, you know, stretch going and keep improving every year. And it just speaks volumes to what Shaka has done with the program.
You know, the big thing I think with this is NIL. I'm the amount of money that is out there and players moving from one school to the next is it's my, you know, for an older guy like me, it's kind of head scratching. And I think it's head scratching for a lot of coaches too. I mean, what do you think?
I think so. I mean, if you look at the transfer portal and NIL together, have changed the landscape for both, you know, college basketball and football. On the basketball side, for sure. I mean, you have guys who will play with four different teams, five, you know, in their career. You know, possibly, you know, AJ Storr. He's already on his second team, and if he comes back and doesn't get drafted, there's a potential that AJ Storr goes to a third team for this next year if he doesn't come back to the Badgers. So it is a different world. It has kind of changed the landscape, especially for, say, like John Calipari in Kentucky, where that was the one-and-done school. That was what, you know, it was almost you could guarantee that there was a lot of one-and-done. Well, that doesn't guarantee success anymore because – these other teams can go out and get these veteran players now. And it's weird saying veteran players when you're talking about college sports, but that's really what it is. You'll have these seniors now that'll be available to go to these teams. And in a way, it's even the playing field. But I'm sure for coaches, it's just maddening. Just not knowing what you're, you know, you might have a different slate every year. At least, you know, you could have half your guys leave. As soon as that transfer portal opens up, and I get notifications, you know, I'm you know, going on social media and go to these different sites. It's amazing the amount of players that are, you know, as soon as the season's over, hop into that portal. So everybody's looking for that perfect fit. So I don't know how you navigate that as a coach. You've got to have so much help, and that's what they do. I mean, they obviously have help with recruiting because there's so many options out there now.
And the amount of money that's out there now, I mean – Caitlin Clark is at about $3 million right now. Angel Reese, you know, I was trying to, from LSU, is trying to make up her mind whether to stay in school or go to the pros. Well, she's making more money in college than she probably would at the pros.
Yeah, and it's a different world. I mean, you were talking, like, this isn't something we would have even imagined. You know, 10 years ago, this wasn't a wasn't imaginable. But now it with the ability to go out there and get sponsorships to sell products, it kind of harkens back to maybe when the Olympics kind of opened that up. Because there was a time when you couldn't be an amateur and still you really couldn't have many, you know, endorsements when you were an amateur athlete. Well, that's kind of changed now with the Olympics for sure. and it has changed in college sports too. You know, you wouldn't see anybody on commercials that was in college sports. And now you're seeing it all over. So it's a tough line that the NCAA has to, you know, kind of straddle here between what amateurism and professionalism. And it's very murky. And I for one can't, you know, I don't know where it's going to end up at this point, especially more on the football side. It feels like it's heading towards something completely different than what we've been seeing.
There's so much confusion, and this is confusion even within the coaching ranks as to how this, what are the boundaries here?
Yeah.
On this. I mean, can a university just, or can a athletic department just pay somebody, $1 million to come? Or, or do they say, well, we have an NIL deal for you that will bring you $1 million?
I mean, it's almost like teams having salary cap managers, you know, for professional sports. It's gotten to that point where like the amount of money now that's involved in college sports, I don't know where it's headed. And that's the tough thing. And I don't know if the NCAA really knows what's the end point of all this. There's still court cases out there to be decided. So it really is just it's a new world when it comes to college athletes and especially with that money that's floating out there.
Tim in Madison emailed that NIL is not good for college sports, in his opinion, just like the Olympic Games were meant for and should be amateur events, should be. The college sports should be for student athletes. Many already get scholarships, but NIL payments take college sports into a new level on the road to professionals and have the possibility of ruining what we had with athletics now, athletes now transferring every year in the portal and going where they get the larger payments.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with them with that point is that you don't know what's going to happen and what the road's going to lead to. And it's tough because I can see the student athletes' argument though, as well of these schools are making money off of my image, which they were before. And they wanted to, I think, if the NCAA hadn't fought it for so long, would we be where we're at now? Or would it have been, okay, they can get this money, they can go make commercials and stuff like that. If that would have happened 20 years ago, I don't know. But it is tough because I don't know if true amateurism in college or is there anymore. And I don't know if it can be there anymore with the amount of money out there, especially for the high star profile athletes. There's so much. If you're an athlete and somebody's offering you this to do an endorsement for a product, it's hard not probably to say no to that, especially if you're in college. So, it really is. I mean, you hear the word slippery slope, and I think that's what now the NCAA is on.
And I'm pretty sure that Storr, for example, he will, if he doesn't go into the pros, he's probably going to go to the highest NIL deal that he can get.
Well, he's going to,
blame him, I guess.
No, exactly. I mean, he's going to look for what team is probably going to have the best shot of being successful next year, what's a fit. And, if that's out there on the table, like you said, it's hard to blame these guys for doing it.
So who do you think is going to win the women's? Do you think it's – who are the final two and who do you think wins? We have, and I should go back and say that we have South Carolina playing North Carolina State. So you got two states right there. I wonder how much competition exists between those two states on a whole lot of things. But and then you've got UConn and Iowa.
I think it's that UConn-Iowa game is going to be a fun one to watch. So will the North Carolina State and South Carolina. But I think that UConn-Iowa, because of the storylines, Paige Buechers coming from Minnesota to be one of the highest. She was, you know, she was Caitlin Clark before Caitlin Clark was at Iowa. So I think you have that matchup. You have Gino Auriemma, who's, you know, beat everybody at some point in his career. So that's going to be a great matchup. And then, yeah, you have North Carolina State and South Carolina. South Carolina's undefeated and almost overshadowed in a way by a lot of these teams in the tournament so far. So I think they have that kind of chip on their shoulder too. And who would have picked the fact that we have North Carolina State and UConn both in both the men's and women's Final Four?
That happens almost never, or maybe never. I don't know.
Yeah, only with UConn, because UConn women are almost there anytime. So anytime the men's teams had success, the women's team was usually there as well. But yeah, for North Carolina State, if you would have, I don't know if that, you know, what a Vegas odds would have been on both those teams being in the Final Four, but they had to be high.
Well, and I think it is a first that there are two teams or two states or put it with both the men and the women in the same Final Four. I think that is a first.
Yeah, so you got to imagine just the excitement at both those campuses coming into this weekend. There's going to be a lot of nervous fans for both those teams.
Yeah, and I think if Caitlin and Caitlin Clark's the rest of her team, two other teammates, one scored 21 and one scored 18. I mean, she's getting plenty of support. So yeah. I think they've got a good chance to beat South Carolina.
I mean, that would be I think if you're looking for the best player, the all-time leading scorer to go out as a champion, I mean, it's hard to bet against Iowa if you look at just the way things have been going. But, yeah, South Carolina, I think it's Iowa, South Carolina, but never count out Gino Auriemma for finding a way to get to the title game.
He's had some injuries. He's got some players that aren't playing. I was amazed that his team won last night because there were – I think at least two starters that weren't able to play because they were injured.
And they were down early, too. So yeah.
They were down early. Well, and then I think UConn is going to win the men. It's hard to imagine that not happening the way they play.
I picked Purdue, but...
yeah. Well,
hopefully Badger fans can forgive me for that one.
They held Illinois to no points. They scored 30 straight points on Illinois, which is a really good team. I had friends who had them picked in the Final Four for sure. So I did want to mention the Brewers because this is their home opener. What a day for a home opener, but hey, there's a cover on the field.
Oh, exactly.
So really exciting bunch, I think, of young talent on the team this year.
Oh, it really is. I got an opportunity to go down to spring training a couple weeks ago. And I mean, the lineup was, you have your Yelichs and Contreras, but most of those players are under 25. A lot of the spring training guys I got to see were under 20. I mean, you got Churio coming out, the highest paid minor leaguer ever. And he's been looking good so far in the lineup, and they have a lot of guys in that farm system that are really young and talented too. So I think it's going to be very similar to how the Packers were this season, where the expectations weren't really there, but you got a lot of young talent that I think is going to make it exciting.
And of course it'll be pitching will be the kind of the big thing for success or not success of the team. They're going to have to score a lot more runs this year than they did in the past. Last year, if they're going to win as many games as they won last year, which I sure hope so. And I've watched two of the games. I didn't go to the games, but I watched two of the games. And Rhys Hoskins, what a player! And there's a veteran that brings some feistiness to the team, and I think is a really great addition.
Yeah, because you had the questions. He didn't play last year, so you didn't know what you were going to get. But in spring training, I think he showed that he's back health-wise, and he was hitting home runs in spring training. He's got one already this year. And, yeah, like playing with a feistiness. I don't even think the slide into second was dirty that the Mets player thought was. But, yeah, you already, you know, two games in, they had the bench coming out. So, baseball season's here, and they seem like they're in mid-season form. And, yeah, I think it'll be fun. And you mentioned the pitching. I mean, it was nice to see Freddie Peralta come out there in that first game and you know, go six innings, give up one hit, and basically match what Corbin Burns did for the Orioles. Yeah. On his opening day start. So it gave, he's like, okay, all the ace for the Brewers did the same thing that their ace from last year did for a different team. So it's just the depth will be a little bit different this year for the Brewers pitching wise.
And this first home game, Bob Uecker's calling it. He turned 90 years old in February. Have you ever met Bob?
I have. I've had the opportunity a few times, just, you know, going to games and saying hi, shaking hands, nothing too much, but just listening to him when he's just talking with people. I mean, the man can tell a story, you know, at a drop of a pin. He's got 15 stories ready to go about anything. So he's always been one of my heroes in sportscasting, just, you know, having grown up listening to him. So yeah, we are fortunate and it's so great to have him on the mic for opening day here. And hopefully, you know, let's get the Brewers get to the World Series and this season. And let's see what happens.
When, you know, when the Brewers were not very good and losing, if they were way behind in a game, I loved listening to Uecker.
Oh yeah. That was the best. Because,
that was
yeah,
the best.
He would just, you know, he would go on the stories, in between stories, and there's a strike, and then he would go back to the story, and he's out at third base, and you know, he would throw in what was happening, but it was just almost so nonchalant because they'd be down 11-1 or something like that, and it wasn't going to get in the way of the story. So, but he kept you informed. But that's Bob Uecker. I mean, he is a legend, and we have been truly blessed to have him behind the mic for as long as we have.
I can remember so much say, oh, I got to listen. I got to keep listening because Uecker is, you know, an 11-1 game. That was the most fun game to listen to him talk because he would come up with story out of where are they out of his, he pulls them out of his hat for.
Well, and I think when Tommy Lasorda sometimes would come and visit the booth or he would have somebody that, you know, was a contemporary that played at that same time, then the stories would really, really flowing. It's such a fine line of, it's so amazing that, you know, to be able to be a play-by-play guy, but being a storyteller, especially in baseball, I think is a really big part of it.
Yeah. Well, on that note, Justice, thank you so much. We'll be I'll root for Purdue for you to win this so you can win here.
Thank you.
Justice Cleveland is sports director of WEAU TV in Eau Claire. Great to have him with us. So hopefully he'll come back and do this again with us. And it was fun talking. I'm sorry we didn't get to all the phone calls here today. Tomorrow, Jamie Nack and David Drake are back with another wildlife roundup, and we'll talk about baby animals, wild animals, and answer your wildlife questions. That's tomorrow at 11. Thanks for listening, and please stay with us. Lots in store on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller.